Hi, I'm Caroline, a yoga therapist and breathwork practitioner with a special interest in menopause based in Edinburgh.
And hi, I'm Dr. Claire, a GP and accredited menopause specialist based in London.
Together, we are the Menopause Sisters, and we are here to guide and support you through your menopause journey. Welcome to the Menopause Sisters Show with myself, Caroline, and my sister, Dr. Claire. And we're delighted today to welcome Sarah Newman to the podcast. Sarah is a cancer and exercise specialist and breast cancer rehab coach, and her own experience of the benefits of exercise in her cancer recovery led her to launch Get Me Back, which offers specialist fitness training for women affected by cancer. And it's an inclusive, accessible way to empower women in their recovery. So Sarah's here to tell us a little bit about her story, how she got here, and a little bit more about Get Me Back. So thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Are you happy maybe just to begin actually with your diagnosis of cancer and where and when that was and where that took you to?
So I was diagnosed in 2018. It was kind of early summer, May time, and I was pregnant for the second time with a little boy. I was about 17 weeks pregnant when I knew something really was not right. I'd been in and out of the kind of early pregnancy unit a few times because I'd experienced some bleeding in my pregnancy, but I'd kind of experienced that in my first pregnancy as well. So I didn't think a huge amount about it, but it did start to get progressively worse. And so eventually, at 17 weeks, I went in and eventually was seen by someone. It was a very busy antenatal unit, and they did find a mass on my cervix. And at that point, they biopsied it, and there was a long wait to find out exactly what it was. And at that point, they were really not giving much away, so it was difficult to know. And Dr. Google is not helpful. I just waited. And about a week later, we were due to have our 20-week scan. And so we turned up and had the scan, and we were told afterwards that we'd be seen by the doctor for the results. And I knew the name of the doctor at that point, and I had Googled her, knew exactly what I was walking into. So the 20-week scan was pretty traumatic. I couldn't really look at the screen because I knew what I was about to be told. And we were kind of escorted from there to a small side room, and basically the words, you've got cancer. And at that point, it wasn't conclusive. The biopsy had not shown the extent of the kind of grade of the cancer. So there were more tests. And because I was pregnant, that was quite limiting in terms of what I could have as a test. I was allowed to have an MRI so they could see whether the cancer had spread and they could find out how big it was. And so that happened very, very quickly. And by the following week, I was in front of an oncologist who was telling me that it was a very late stage, but a stage one cancer, probably the biggest it could have been without spreading. And that was mainly due to the fact that I think my pelvis was so expanded anyway because baby was there, and baby was basically feeding cancer because the blood supply was just running straight down to my uterus. So we were faced with a pretty traumatic decision of what to do. And at that point, I was 19 weeks pregnant. So in my view, showing and was quite far along, but actually in kind of pregnancy terms, I wasn't even really halfway and still within the terms of termination. So we had to make a decision whether or not to continue with the pregnancy and have chemotherapy just to keep it at bay, but no radiotherapy, which was ultimately the cure for my type of cancer, or to terminate and have the only sure way to know that they could cure what the tumor that I had. There was no surgical option because the tumor was too big. We spent weeks deciding. We had limited time, but we had a week, 10 days to decide. And because I have a small son, I had a small son at home already who was 2.5 at the time. Every time I looked at him, I just felt this guilt of what would happen if I wasn't here. And it's an impossible decision that I would never want anyone to make. And we had to make the decision based on our life and what was right at the time. And we decided that the only sure way to cure me and keep me alive was to terminate the pregnancy. And so our little boy was born. And He lived a short time, but he did eventually pass away about an hour and a half after he was born. And then it was pretty brutal from then on. So we were treated like just absolutely amazingly by the team at the Royal Surrey, who were the midwife team. They looked after us, and we were given access to all the right counselling and everything like that. But I think the tough thing is that was a Thursday that he was born, and by Tuesday I was in chemotherapy. So that was the hardest thing, was trying to deal with the grief, and trying to then face cancer treatment. So by Tuesday I was hooked up to chemo, and that's where the cancer journey began. And within, I think, probably 2 weeks after that, I was given my first Zoladex injection, which is when, from being pregnant to pretty much going into menopause. So the Zoladex shut down my ovaries. They made sure that hopefully the chemotherapy wasn't affecting my ovaries, but they were also preparing everything for some other treatment that was coming. And so at that point, I was plunged into medical menopause. I was 34, and I knew it was going to be temporary. At least I hoped it was going to be temporary, but it wasn't certain that it was going to be. Because what they then went on to do was transpose my ovaries. So your ovaries, obviously slightly above your uterus, what they did is they cut the fallopian tubes off at the base, and then moved my ovaries up behind my liver and my spleen, and they're pinned there now, not attached to the uterus or anything, and they'll remain there for the rest of my life, but with the hope that they would start working again. And so that was kind of trying to keep my fertility, so that if I did want to go on and have IVF and use a surrogate to carry the child, it was an option. And also because I then, if my ovaries started working again, would come out of menopause and have a little bit more life left, without menopausal symptoms into my 30s, but would ultimately go through menopause early. So yeah, that happened, I think in July, and then it was just chemo from then on, and the radiotherapy was introduced pretty soon after that operations happened, and went on all the way until the end of the summer, so the end of August. And then I had some internal radiotherapy as well. So by the 31st of August, I think was the last day of my treatment, I was done. And I was pretty much floored by it all. I was so physically like done. I just had nothing left to give. I was having treatment, weekly chemotherapy, and then every weekday was radiotherapy as well on top. And it destroyed my fatigue. And I didn't know at that point that physically I was capable of doing anything. I didn't feel capable of doing anything. So that's kind of my lack of understanding at that point of knowing what exercise potentially could have done for me, you know, for my mental health as much as anything, could have been a really useful tool to help manage some of those symptoms, not make them go away, but manage some of those symptoms that I was experiencing at that point.
That's an incredible story. And my heart, just hearing you tell that story, Sarah, my heart is just here in my throat. And the amount of time, that time span that you talk about there, just such a short amount of time between losing, your second son and going into treatment. And that normally, you would hope that people have some sort of time to process the loss of a child, but to be plunged into treatment and then into menopause. And as you say, completely exhausted, completely just that was it mentally and physically. But I'm interested in what you were saying about the team and the support you had in that process, because often we do hear of adverse experiences, awful experiences happening, and women maybe not getting that support. And it sounded like you had a really amazing team supporting you through this really, really very, very difficult place you were in.
I was very lucky because there is a unit at the Royal Surrey, which is a teenage and young adult unit. And even though I'm not really a teenager or a young adult, because I was pregnant, they just took me, and young, they took me under their wing. I didn't want to be sat in a chemotherapy suite having conversations with people a week after losing a baby. And so I was offered this fantastic opportunity to have my own room, have a calm environment, have nurses that were just so gentle and just so calm, and they had time to listen. And they are just the most incredible people. They support a lot of men and women in their 20s and teenage years, but also pushing up the kind of age range to those who are, in their 30s but need that additional support. And I think I was kind of like one of their most geriatric patients, but since they've taken in other people who have been in their 30s who've just needed that extra level. And with that comes a counsellor supported by Macmillan and other support services that we really, really needed at the time. And so I was given a counsellor from pretty much my first chemo session. She would sit with me whilst I was having my chemo and we would talk. And to begin with, it was just about me just managing the huge amount of emotion and trauma that was happening at the time. And she gave me some incredible strategies to help do that. And then when I was ready, we started to kind of go through some of the grief and trying to sit with some of the emotion that I had felt in that short space. Because, as you said, it was like literally overnight, our lives were just completely smashed out of control. And it's amazing how such a short period of time can just change you forever. But that counselor stuck with me for 5 years. We've only literally just kind of gone our separate ways. And the team at the TIAC unit at Royal Surrey, I still see, and I'm still on part of their Facebook group. So I know that they're always there and I can reach out to them if I ever need to.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for sharing your journey, because it is, and it sounds, it sounds belittling of me almost to say that it's a real privilege to hear that, because I think hearing your story and the change in the symptoms and the change in how you felt from really overnight has almost spurred you on, hasn't it, to create something out of that and to try and help and empower other women and men as well. Can you tell us a bit about how that started and what gave you that drive it at a time potentially, and I'm not, that was dark for you, wasn't it? It was really hard. What made you, what enabled you to do what you do, and tell us a bit about what you do.
Well, I think just generally from that whole experience, I felt a presence of something. And I'm not religious, I'm not particularly that spiritual, but I just felt that I needed to do something to make this horrible choice that we'd had to make worthwhile. And, I had to put all my energy into it, and that was something that I wanted to do to help people. And part of my recovery was about rebuilding this kind of body that had failed me. And exercise had always been my go-to for mental and physical health. And so when I started to feel like I started to move again, just really gently to begin with, yoga and breathing exercises. And then I started to get outside more, walk more with friends. I found an exercise class that was outside, and it was for postnatal women, which wasn't really the best setting for me, but at the same time, was the right kind of person to be able to train me. She understood. I was very open with her, and there were situations that we had to get through together. But it was brilliant being on top of a hill overlooking the whole of Surrey and just feeling alive. And I was like, there's got to be something for people like me who are active and have had cancer and need to understand what's safe, what's not safe. What my limitations are, if there are any. And so I started to look into it and research it, and I found out that actually you can become a cancer and exercise specialist by doing your personal training diploma, by taking extra levels up to become a cancer and exercise specialist. And I thought, I've got time on my hands here. I was granted maternity leave, and had obviously no baby to look after. And so I was like, right, I'm going to use my time. I need to use my brain. Although, as you will know from menopause, it was not the greatest brain. And so I started studying. So my treatment ended in or August. I started exercising around about October. And then things started to get better, and I started to feel a bit more normal around January. So in January, I started my PT diploma, and by March, I'd completed two levels, my just general personal training diploma, and I was due to go back to work. And I had a job in London. I worked in medical PR, and about 2 weeks before I was due to go back, my boss made me redundant. And so I thought, do you know what? This is a sign. I'm going to put all of my effort, and actually, do you know what? That drove me pretty well as well. I was like, okay, fine. Well, it's meant to be. So I went straight into it, and I threw everything into it. And it was difficult to begin with. I started working with people who wanted to use exercise for health reasons, not for aesthetic reasons. They were using it because they wanted to feel stronger so they could do more, or they'd had an illness and they wanted to use it to help them recover. And that's kind of where Get Me Back started. And as time went on and I got stronger, I was able to take on more clients because physically it was a very demanding job and that was quite hard on my body. And slowly got into it, built up a client base, but always with the view that it would be cancer that I was going to work on and focus on. And lucky or not, lockdown hit at the end of that year or beginning of the next. And it was like, wow, we need to go online quite quickly here. And I have no idea what Zoom is, but let's work it out. And so overnight it was like, switch. Right, let's get on Zoom, let's work online. And then all through that kind of first few weeks, you see there was Joe Wicks, everyone was giving out free workouts, free advice. And I was like, right, well, if they can get it all for free, why are they going to pay me for it? And so I thought, this is your time, Sarah. By that point, I'd done my cancer and exercise qualification. And I was like, this has got to just be about cancer now. So I changed everything on my website, just updated all of the wording. I was like, this is all I do. I am a cancer and exercise specialist, and this is what Get Me Back is all about. And literally, it just spiraled from there. I just got more and more specialist. I was reaching people all over the world through this kind of online offering now, mainly on a one-to-one basis. But people were coming to me to seek advice on how to exercise after cancer and during their treatment as well, and before their treatment. And just knowing that there was so much more information and data out there about how exercise could support these people, was really important. And that was kind of a time where all of that research was really coming to light. So it was an amazing experience over lockdown to start working with people online. And that's really where the business started to take off.
And the name as well, for me, that idea of, getting yourself back, getting back to the person that you knew, as it were, and a little piece of that. And it sits beautifully with menopause, but also for those, that have had cancer treatment. There's kind of those two things together, and that element of kind of refinding yourself. And so, can I ask you about your kind of menopause journey through this? I'm assuming here that you went into menopause with the treatment, and was there anything you were able to take to support some of the symptoms that you experienced?
Yeah, so once I was in full menopause, having taken Zoladex, I was given HRT because my cancer wasn't driven by any hormones. So I was taking HRT for probably about 15 months. And then I noticed a change in things that were happening in my body. And I was like, oh, it's not right. And then they were like, I think your ovaries are working again. So we retested because they were testing my levels every so often. And suddenly something just happened. I think 2 years after my last Zoladex treatment, they thought the ovarian transposition had failed, but it just took that little bit longer for them to just restart. And so I was back out and in like normal levels for a normal person. And I think they were quite shocked how delayed it taken and how normal the levels were. I put a lot of that down to exercise. And I changed my diet and I reduced my alcohol consumption, and all of those things definitely helped level me. So yeah, I came out of the menopause and I spent probably 4 or 5 years feeling pretty normal, occasionally getting a few dips, particularly if I drank alcohol or if I did something where I wasn't looking after myself and took my eye off the ball. And then recently, actually just in December, I have been put back on the HRT because I noticed the brain fog was really getting quite bad. I was becoming, it was words. So I'd be doing something like this and I couldn't find the word. And that was really not good in a job where you are basically on show and talking to camera a lot. So I went back to the GP, my joints were hurting, and my anxiety was getting worse. And so I was put on a combined regimen of HRT. So that's been going now since December. So I'm a couple of months in and definitely feeling different. It's not quite as miraculous as it was when I was on Zoladex. But I think I'm just finding my balance still. So yeah, back into perimenopause, but this time is a natural progression, not quite so like slam into menopause.
And we know it takes a while to, get HRT doses right for each individual person as well. And I guess what I'd love to ask you is around kind of bone health and heart health, because we know many people choose not to take HRT, but of course many people can't take HRT when it comes to cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment. And we know that weight-bearing exercise can support our bone health. We know some sort of cardio, even if it's light cardio, can really support heart health. But so where would you start with somebody who had had a cancer diagnosis, had had some treatment, had been plunged into menopause? How would you start with them?
So I think menopause is has many joys, but one being that it does highlight a lot of pre-existing injuries. So if you've had any niggles before going into menopause and before cancer treatment, those niggles tend to kind of return. So I was always look at somebody from pre-existing conditions, pre-existing injuries, and check whether their mobility and their general movement patterns are correct. And that would be the first thing that I would do, would correct any of those kind of things. If I was working with someone with breast cancer, particularly always looking at their shoulders and their posture, making sure that that is working well and that their pelvic floor is working effectively for them. And then from there, once they're moving correctly, I'd look at mainly a weight bearing program, using their body weight to begin with, but then progressing them into strength and resistance, using simple things that you can find at home or dumbbells, a light set of dumbbells to begin with, and then just progressing that weight nice and gradually and safely, teaching them the right type of exercise for them, particularly if they've had any specific cancer treatments that limit their movement or have had lymph nodes removed and things like that. We just have to be a little bit careful in certain aspects. But generally, weight-bearing exercises will really help with things like joint pain. They will improve bone density, and generally building back up any muscle mass that they might have lost through their treatment if they've had cancer. So that would be my general focus. The cardiovascular side is really important now, well, in menopause, but also after cancer treatment, because a lot of the chemotherapies are starting to show cardiotoxic effects on the heart. And so getting back into that nice regular exercise routine is important. The combination of aerobic and resistance training together has been shown to have the most effective benefits, particularly during cancer treatment, at reducing some side effects that are very similar to menopause, but also can come alongside, nausea, things like that. So yes, focusing on the strength training, particularly with me, but making sure that I'm giving them kind of homework from a cardiovascular point of view, getting them outside, getting them walking, or introducing some kind of like running or cycling program to try and get their cardiovascular fitness a little bit better. I also run a low impact HIIT class. So this isn't like an interval training class, but trying to reduce impact on joints that I know are a little bit more delicate. So I don't do anything like burpees, planks, anything like that. And jumping is minimal because it's nice to have a little bit of load through the joint, but not like overly doing it because of the pelvic floor as well. So that can get the heart rate up and it can work to really improve cardiovascular fitness quite quickly because you're doing those short bursts of high interval training. And with that comes a little bit of weight bearing exercise as well. So you kind of get for two for one. But yes, those are the things that I would focus on. I was going to say something else and now I've completely forgotten.
It's a perfect place for me to interject and just say brain fog. I always think of, and if I'm doing any sort of exercise or something new, I can imagine, with the brain fog particularly, that's great for exercising the brain as well. Just thinking about whether it's crossing the midline or having to do a different movement that you're not used to doing.
Yeah, I think definitely for that's where I saw an improvement was as soon as I'd done something, like even walked done the school run, I came back and I could focus rather than if I sat down in the morning straight at my computer, I really, really struggle to get motivated, to focus. It just kind of brings everything together and it's much easier to focus. Yeah,
And I
definitely
quite like
recommend.
what you're saying about kind of, you incorporating getting outside. I know that we all know getting outside and movement outside is brilliant for our mental health, but actually, in terms of incorporating it into exercise, that's something that's, I guess, relatively simple for anybody really
Yeah.
to do, whether you've had a history of cancer or not. In terms of, because obviously we're focusing today a little bit on menopause after cancer, but in terms of that, is there a point in time where you would recommend people start trying to move or exercise, whether that's during their cancer treatment or after, or is it really just very, a bit like HRT in a way, very individualized? It depends on the person, it depends on where they are in that journey and how they're feeling. Is there a sort of benchmark that you would use?
So the general recommendation is that you move throughout, but that, as you said, is very individual and it depends how you feel. I felt floored by my treatment and the thought of exercising. I don't know whether I went back and I actually pushed myself to move, whether it would have had a more beneficial impact on my energy. But it is a personal prescription because it's an exercise prescription that we're giving somebody, and that is going to be different for me than it is for you, Claire. And so it's a bit of trial and error to begin with. It's making sure that you don't push someone to exhaustion, so they have to go to bed after a workout. You're giving them energy. So it might just be a very simple 10-minute workout, and that's enough. Or for somebody else, it might be a little bit more. And one day it might be different to the other day. And that, I think that's what people find quite confusing. I don't think you're going to do huge amounts of damage if you get to the point where you need to go to bed, but the next time you just need to take it back a little bit and find the point where you feel the benefit from the exercise. So lots of people who've exercised before cancer try and go out and do something that they used to do, and that is a little bit too much, and it can be too much. It might not always be too much, but those people you need to rein in a little bit and just slow them down and find out where their point is. Other people who haven't done exercise before, you need to build them up a little bit more gradually, and suddenly they start to see this huge benefit in their energy. They're able to walk up the stairs again because their joints feel more. They feel looser. They're able to do things, like bend down and pick things up that they hadn't been able to do for ages because they felt really, really achy and horrible. So I think it is very individualized, but generally the advice is don't sit still, move around. A 20-minute daily walk is really the kind of exercise base. And if you can get yourself to that base, that's a really good starting point. Anything beyond that is going to be great, but the base of exercise, just getting outside every day. I mean, I work with clients, and when I started working for Get Me Back, everything was outside because for me, that's even in the snow, I was outside. It was something really special that helped with my mental health. It helped with my hot flashes, so I was cooler outside, so I could work harder, I could work for longer, and I felt more comfortable being outside because I didn't feel claustrophobic when I had that hot flush. So I think there are huge benefits to being outside. It's free exercise outside. You've got park benches everywhere that you can use for resistance exercises, sit to stand, squats. You can use the back of it to press up. There's loads of different things that you can do with free equipment, free gyms in the park. But being outside has huge benefits for vitamin D intake and lots of different mental health benefits as well.
I love that you've mentioned that mental health aspect, particularly of being outside, Sarah, because I think that's really key wherever you are, within a kind of menopause journey. And I think it's quite interesting that the general consensus or advice is, 20 minute walk, for example, keep moving. And I'm assuming that's around just making sure you don't lose too much strength or muscle mass, and perhaps supporting lymphatic system as well. This kind of idea of just keeping everything moving.
Yeah, I mean, what they're finding now with the research that's coming out more is actually the more muscle mass you have, the more effective your treatment works and the longer that you can tolerate it. So actually, if you stay fitter and stronger throughout your treatment, you're more likely to be able to go through the full dose of all of it, and therefore obviously it works as effectively as it can. So the kind of aims of exercise are not necessarily to go from A to B, and B being much higher up, and you're progressing through your treatment. During cancer treatment, is to try and maintain as much muscle mass as possible. So you're not necessarily going to get fitter, but you're trying not to lose your fitness.
Yeah,
And then
just
when you come out,
maintaining.
yeah, exactly. And then when you come out the other side, that's when you can start to see the progression. And then when you're preparing for treatment, you want to basically feel like treatment is the marathon. You want to get as fit as possible, cardiovascularly mainly, so that you can tolerate the anaesthetic, so that you can recover faster, get out of hospital, all of those things. Exercise is going to help you do that.
I just wanted to reiterate that point because I think that's a really interesting comment that you made, actually, is that you're not trying to get from A to B necessarily. You're trying to maintain and sustain a level of fitness, and you're not trying to run marathons. You're not trying to get necessarily faster at something that you were doing before, but it's just being able to keep moving. And I think that, and I hope that for many of our listeners, is less daunting than the idea of I must move, I must exercise, I must do, that kind of almost negative thinking that I can imagine you get into when you're undergoing cancer treatment or you have a cancer diagnosis. It's quite a fearful time, and having to do something else, or that kind of, I guess, being sort of directed to do something else can also add to that stress, can't it?
No, I totally appreciate that. And I do feel that some people feel forced into exercise, and I would never, ever want anyone to feel like that. I think it's about picking something that you really enjoy as exercise, something that you want to do, like, walking with friends or with family. I used to meet up with people and we'd go for a walk and, end up with a cup of coffee and maybe a slice of cake. But that was the exercise, was the catch up. It wasn't exercise really, it was a catch up. So finding something that is fun, that you enjoy, and that isn't a chore, and remembering that, for me, exercise became a bit of a gift. It was something, particularly in my recovery, I was actually able to do. It was my control over my body, and it was the one thing that I had control over, because everyone was sticking needles into my arm every day, and it was like my body had been taken over by the medical profession and I had no control over it. The one thing that I could control was how I moved it, and also how you feed it and nourish it too, that comes alongside that. So I think it's reframing a lot of how you see exercise. Exercise is seen so much as kind of this torture of, I've eaten too much, I should exercise now.
We often talk about we just often talk about movement, don't we, Claire? And actually, that idea of, just as you said, Sarah, reframing it, maybe it is gardening, maybe it is going for a walk with your dog or friends. It doesn't have to be, as you say, the kind of resistance training and everything else immediate unless you want to go there. And just as a trauma-informed teacher, something that I want to pick up on here is that lovely word you've used, the kind of empowerment and giving somebody agency over their body when it feels like everything is being taken away from them. Because we now know there's evidence around emotions being stored in the body and things kind of getting stuck. And this idea of movement, of yoga, of walking, of breathing, of resistant training, if that's what you want to do, of shifting that. And that feeds back into what we've been talking about and this idea of being outside and the benefits to mental health as well.
Yeah, I think exercise should do that for everybody, whether or not they have cancer. And I think that's what cancer taught me, was to not treat exercise like something that is kind of to kind of pay off the amount of food that I've eaten. It's something that I'm gifted to be able to do. It's something that will allow my body to move effectively for longer, that will keep my bones strong and help me, look after my child for as long as I can, and hopefully look after his children too. So I think, reframing how you see exercise, particularly as you go through menopause or you go through an illness, is really important. Movement shouldn't feel like a chore, it should feel like a gift.
And I think, that kind of reflects really nicely on some of the work I think you're doing. And we'll talk about how people can find you in a moment. But I know I avidly follow you on Instagram, and you have really easily approachable mini exercises, if you like, that are so accessible. And I think that's the other thing, it's the accessibility of what you do, which is so joyful, because you can do like a lot of this, we're talking about, going outside, but on the days that you don't necessarily feel like that, there are little videos, aren't there, that you do about what you can do at home. Can you just tell me maybe a couple of the ones that you've done recently? I know some of my favorites, but there's a couple that I think I love.
So over Christmas, I did a Christmas advent, and every single day I did an exercise snack, and they included sofa hit punching cushions, laundry basket strength training, and broomstick bingo, which was all the exercises that you can do with a pole or a broomstick. There were 24 exercises, so there was quite a lot going on. But I just want people to know that it is really accessible, because the whole basis of what Get Me Back is now is online. It's people doing home workouts, and it's really important that these people, they don't feel like they need to leave their house, or they might not want to leave their house, but they can still exercise and enjoy exercise and still be part of a community of people that really understand them. And it's really difficult when you've just had cancer, or if you're going through menopause, to turn up to an exercise class and the instructor says, "Has anyone got anything they'd like to tell me?" And you're like, "How long you got?" Because there's a lot going on here. And when they turn up to my classes, I hope, unless they've got any injuries, that they don't need to tell me that, because the exercises are designed with that in mind. I will never get to an exercise that I know anyone is not capable of doing. And I will always have options for people that have just got started. And that's why, showing these exercise snacks is that kind of extra step to supporting people to getting into a more structured exercise program, and showing them that actually it is quite straightforward and you're doing a lot of it already. Strength training is all based on functional movement. It's on movements we do every day, getting in and out of a chair, picking things up the floor, pushing, pulling, hinging. It all of these movements we do daily, it's just putting them into a structured exercise program. So my website is getmeback.uk, and from there you can download the app, which is a membership app. So it's a monthly subscription, or you can pay as you go, and all of the classes are recorded, so you can access this huge on-demand library of workouts. There's a community behind it where we have chats about everything from exercise to nutrition. There's a physiotherapist who helps us out, and an amazing yoga instructor who does classes every other week as well. I'm also on Instagram at GetMeBackUK on Instagram and Facebook. I've just joined TikTok. I can't remember what my handle is,
You're
but I
brave
don't have
doing
as much
TikTok.
content on there yet.
Oh, there'll be a moment for that. And I can very much vouch for your Instagram account, because I love your little videos, and I do them regularly, and I think about them a lot. So I think they're fantastic. So just in terms of top tips, actually, what would you say to anyone that is thinking about starting exercise or not, or has had a diagnosis of cancer, and might be plunged into a medical menopause? What are the things that, looking back, you could have told yourself how to manage? Top tips really about that, or and what you found to be most helpful for you?
I think first off is talking about it at age 34 when you go through the menopause. It's, there's not really people around you that can actually contribute to that conversation. There's an amazing charity, which is how we met Claire, Cancer and Menopause, Menopause and Cancer, sorry. And they have a huge community of men and women who've been through menopause as a result of cancer, and they really empower people to discuss options. You know, there's a yes and no black and white for HRT, but it doesn't have to be like that. There are conversations that can be had about alternative options. So opening up those conversations to have with your medical team is really, really important. And then alongside that, making sure that you've got a little bit of a toolbox of things that you can do to help support yourself, and making sure you've got exercise as part of that, starting small and growing that, having some support from somebody who can help you do that in a program, or just providing you with some really top tips, simple things like these exercise snacks to get started. And just don't be afraid of moving more. I think, you know, walking has amazing, amazing results. And then once you feel more confident, reaching out and finding a little bit of extra support. And then alongside that, finding someone who can help you nourish your body with good nutrition and hydration to make sure that you feel that you're eating all of the right things so that you can feel as healthy and in control of your body and what you're putting into your body as possible.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your honesty and sharing your story and your journey. I know it's going to help many, many people that listen to our podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.